The Democrats running to be the next governor of Florida meet for a debate in Fort Myers. Did you watch it? Also, recent polls for the GOP nomination show a big lead for Congressman Ron DeSantis. The state of play in the governor's race. That's what we're talking about this morning. And we are live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and thanks for listening. We are always live at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, an update on the state of both primary races for governor. Who will get your vote? Give us a call now at 549-2937. Then later, it's a brand new app to keep you healthy. You get rewards for spending a little time outdoors in our beautiful local and national parks. We'll tell you about that too. Plus, we've got a special treat later in the hour, a ticket giveaway as Players by the Sea debuts a new show, Lin-Manuel Miranda's show Before Hamilton. That's later this morning. All of that ahead, but first this hour, the five major Democratic candidates for governor of Florida met on a stage for the first time last night. Now, here are a few highlights from the debate. It was held at Gulf Coast University in Fort Myers and broadcast on Wink TV. Take a listen.
Now, you may notice I look a little different than my other friends up here on stage. I'm a mom, former PTA president, public school official, and I served Florida in Congress. And it is these life experiences that make me uniquely qualified to be the next governor of Florida.
Take everyday gun violence. Conventional politicians in Tallahassee have not stood up to the NRA to solve and pass basic common sense measures. Take the toxic algae blooms right now poisoning both of our coasts. Huge, huge problem. And nobody in either party has stood up to Big Sugar and done what needs to be done to fix this problem once and for all.
And I'm on this stage running for anybody who has ever been told that they don't belong, that they don't come from the right family, don't have a deep enough bank account. I'm here for those of us who are living the everyday experience trying to learn to survive and thrive in this state. And it is my condition that we deserve a seat at the table too.
But you know what? I've had to fight for every single thing in my life. And I can tell you, every single day when I wake up, I never forget where I came from and how I got here. I will fight for Florida families if you make me your governor. I promise you that.
We have these algae blooms and environmental issues and a sea that's rising all over the state. We have a minimum living wage, which is way too low to live on. Many folks in Florida, 1.6 million, don't have health insurance. I have a baby boy, two additional children. I'm running so that they have a shot at the Florida and the American dream. I'm running for governor so that everybody in Florida can have a shot at the American dream.
All right, so you just listened to, in order, Gwen Graham, Chris King, Andrew Gillum, Jeff Green, and Philip Levine. Now, the recent polling on this race shows former Congresswoman Gwen Graham with a slight lead over Philip Levine, a South Florida businessman. But you know what? There are still large numbers of Democrats around Florida who are unsure of who they'll vote for. And the same goes for Republicans. Lots of undecided voters there, too. At the same time, President Trump's endorsement of Palm Coast Congressman Ron DeSantis has clearly affected the Republican primary. Recent polls now show DeSantis with a double-digit lead over Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam. Those are the two major Republican candidates in the race. They were supposed to debate last night down in the Villages, but it was canceled so that DeSantis could appear with Donald Trump Jr. in Longwood. The president, meanwhile, is expected to appear at a rally with DeSantis on July 31st. So we're talking about the governor's race here on the show this morning. Voting is just around the corner for the August 28th primary. They will actually be mailing out the absentee ballots, I think, in a week or so. FSCJ political science professor Daniel Cronrath is here in studio with his insights. Hey, Daniel, good morning.
Hi, Melissa. Good morning to you.
And here's our question to callers. Have you made up your mind? Who will get your vote in the Florida governor's race? What are the issues that matter most to you when it comes to the future of Florida? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or let us know your thoughts on our Facebook page. Okay, let's start on the Democratic side. Five Democrats on the debate stage last night for the first time. Who did well? Who maybe didn't stand out so much?
Yeah, well, last night I watched the debate with a focus group of one, myself. So I'm really interested to find out what any of the callers who are calling in today are reaching out to you versus Twitter or social media thought. I think there were some winners last night. I think, first of all, I think the number one winner was anybody who's going to be voting in a Democratic primary. I think that collectively the individuals on stage last night performed well. I don't know if there was a lot that took place last night that necessarily would change anybody's minds. I think if you went into last night and you were a supporter of Gwen Graham, or if you went in last night and you were a supporter of Andrew Gillum or Chris King, or any of the other folks on stage, I don't think that there was like some sort of moment within the debate which was going to move the public needle. Or the public opinion needle. I do think, however, if you were somebody turning into these candidates for the first time, you got a lot of information. And to that end, I mean, I think if you were going to call winners and losers, just from last night's debate, I thought Philip Levine was a winner.
Why is that?
Well, I think that the one thing that he did very, very early on is that he campaigned against Rick Scott. And I think that pretty much the entire night, he had the governor in his view. He lined up clearly in his sights in terms of who he was going to be speaking about and who he was going to be effectively campaigning about. Of course, this is an open seat. There is no incumbent. The incumbent governor, Rick Scott, is clearly running for the Senate. But he kept focused on the policies of the last 8 years and on the policies of the last 20 years and made a very, very clear clarion call to Democratic voters that if you want change and you want to get away from the administrations we've had in the past, that I am your candidate for that. Who else did well last night? I think to a certain degree, I think Chris King did well. I think one of the challenges with Chris King, I think, is that if you were having a debate or if you were running for policy wonk of Florida, Chris would clearly win. He's detailed in his programs that he wants to implement statewide. He's well-versed in a variety of issues important to Democratic voters, the environment, guns, education, affordable housing, which, of course, he's been a very successful businessman at. The problem is really – and what has really become soundbite culture in terms of our politics is that Chris has a very, very slow, deliberate, and detailed presentation style. Which I think sometimes is lost in a debate forum like that, where you have, 60 or 90 seconds to get out and to communicate your thoughts clearly. Outside of that, I mean, I think everything did well. I think, oddly, one of the losers, if there was a loser last night, might have been Florida Gulf Coast University.
Why is that?
Well, I don't know if any of your callers noticed this. It just the setting looked like it was kind of like in the conference room of a Holiday Inn.
Show them off to best advantage.
No. I for being a relatively new university, and Florida Gulf Coast is a very, very fine institution in Florida. I mean, it's an excellent, beautiful campus, excellent facilities. It looked like where the debate was staged was like in some sort of ante room. Off, I don't know what.
Dennis waiting room. Yeah. We'll go to your calls in a moment about the governor's race at 549-2937. Now, you mentioned that Philip Levine and, of course, the newest billionaire entry to the race, Jeff Green, they have unlimited funds, basically, to spend getting up on television, which is so key to winning a statewide race in Florida. Gwen Graham, the only woman on the Democratic side, she finally did just now get up on TV in this market and a few others. So there's an interesting dynamic going on with the Democrats this cycle in that you've got two wealthy businessmen who have unlimited funds to spend on this race. We've seen that story before in Florida. Think about how Rick Scott won. Okay, so as that plays out, at the same time, there are two major Republican candidates running. Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam, seen as the traditional Republican in the race. He's running a very traditional campaign. And Congressman Ron DeSantis, a very conservative member of the House Freedom Caucus. He's running a campaign basically on Fox News. He's campaigning, by and large, on Fox News. He's not doing local interviews. He's not doing a lot of appearances, although he does have the endorsement of President Trump, and that seems to be paying off for him in the latest polling. So what are your thoughts about the two-man race on the Republican side?
Right. I think, you know, the one thing about a primary election, both on the Democratic and Republican side, is that come August 28th, the one thing we're going to be guaranteed of is a low voter turnout. That is just the pattern. You know, if either party can get 30% of their registered voters to turn out, that's going to be a decent night for a primary election. That being said, in conjunction with a low turnout, you're also going to be dealing with a lot of low information voters. They're going to be responding to the amount of money spent on TV ads, who they're seeing optically, who's going to be on their evening news, who's going to be buying ads on the websites that they're looking at. And to this extent, where some folks may find it odd, for example, Congressman DeSantis not making a lot of public appearances, taking the unprecedented move of canceling a debate to go see not the president, but the president's son somewhere
right,
else.
Right,
state.
Last night. Last
Correct.
Night.
The incredible amount, at least in my mind, of disrespect that really shows to Commissioner Putnam, you know, to be an opponent in the race. As you said, he effectively can get away with it. There's already been a pattern, whether it be Governor Scott, whether it be Donald Trump himself. In a primary race like this, if you can effectively create a niche medium for you to be able to go out and market yourself with little risk and high reward, which is what Fox News represents for Congressman DeSantis, you have to logically ask the question from a campaign perspective, why would you do any other events? You're sitting there really in the catbird seat of being able to run. And it puts Commissioner mm-hmm. Putnam in a very, very difficult position. You know, he himself, a very, very popular establishment Republican. If you were to go out the panhandle of the state, someplace where I suspect that regardless of this election, Commissioner Putnam is going to be doing very, very well through Tallahassee, out to Pensacola, with the more rural agrarian parts of Florida or where Commissioner Putnam is very, very well respected. Will that make a difference? You know, will that matter in an election where you're basically going to be, you know, soundbite candidacy?
Let's go to your calls as we talk about the Florida governor's race. Hard to believe the primary's just about a month away. Overseas and absentee ballots will be mailed out within a couple of weeks. Can you believe it? Who will get your vote? What are your thoughts? What are your questions? It's 549-2937. Let's go to George down in Bay Meadows right now. Hi, George. Good morning.
Hey, George. I'm Melinda. What's your name? Melissa.
Melissa, yeah.
Yeah. I listen to the show every day, and I really enjoy it. I had a hard time deciding what Democrat to vote for. I think they're all very qualified. I'm leaning toward Graham. I think she has the government experience, and after the debacle of her president, with no government experience, and I really like Chris King. He's a really sharp guy, and I'm a vote for Green and Levine if they get a nomination. And Gilliam's really impressive too. But what turns me off with Green and Levine? They got a lot of money, and that's why I'm a Democrat. I would die before I'd vote for a Republican. I think Governor Scott's been a disaster, and the guy in the White House is a disaster, too. I'm a progressive Democrat, and I'm very proud of it.
All right, George.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks for the call. Okay. A lot of commentary from George there.
Sure. I think that George is reflective of a lot of people, from what I've heard from a lot of progressive Democrats. They're looking for a Democratic candidate who can identify with working people. They're looking for a Democratic candidate who represents some of the more traditional values of the Democratic Party. It's interesting, however, I think that in listening to George and in listening to other folks, there seems to be a resentment right now in the progressive movement of Democrats who have actually somehow managed to make money for themselves and become wealthy.
Right. He said he wouldn't vote for either Green or Levine because they're self-made.
Sure. And that's, it's kind of, yeah. Whether you're a Democratic or Republican, that's kind of antithetical to the American dream to say, okay, you started from humble beginnings. You've always had progressive values. You've still done it the right way. You've become wealthy in our country. And now I'm no longer interested in voting for you per se, which is interesting, you know.
Now, both Levine and Green, as we've been talking about, have the money to run ads. They've been Levine in particular has been running lots of them, and it's helped him increase name recognition throughout this state. Levine made his money in the South Florida cruise ship industry. Green is this developer and investor who basically, a la the movie The Big Short, he bet against the housing market. Back in 2008, he correctly saw that the housing bubble was going to burst and bet against it. I made a bunch of money doing that. If anyone's seen the movie The Big Short, you understand how he made his money. Although he's saying he's going to spend most of it on philanthropy. But yeah, So you, again, we see this spectacle in this state of a self-funding, essentially self-funding businessman throwing as much money as possible at the governor's race.
Sure. And to George's point and to other folks' point on this issue, I mean, there is something to be in a Democratic primary and have one of the folks now who's leading the polls being somebody who made billions of dollars off of other people's calamity. You know, there is something to be said about that in terms of earning your wealth. But yeah, you know, this is a, it's going to be very, very interesting to watch this shakedown, Melissa.
It is. And, you know, you're saying, Daniel, that the turnout will be low, but will it really be as low as a typical off-year election?
So,
this is an unusual time in this country.
It is. It is. And this is, I would argue this, and I know a lot of folks take exception to this, that considering that presidential elections typically get all of our attention, I think in Florida that this 2018 election is the most important. And I know this is going to sound so cliche to everybody out there. I think this election is the most important one that we've had in Florida in a long time. I think between the work that was done by the Constitutional Revision Commission and some of the head-scratching product they produced out of that 20-year – we only get – you know, every 20 years we get an opportunity to redo our Constitution. And considering the fact that we're going to have to make a choice between offshore oil drilling and vaping indoors and the exact same ballot initiative you know, this between.
Hey, at least it's not pregnant pigs. Remember that one?
Yeah.
You remember that amendment we were all asked to vote on?
Yes.
Years ago?
Yes. So between that opportunity, between Amendment 4, which is really, really galvanizing a lot of folks in the progressive movement. You know, this, of course, being the constitutional amendment to restore voting rights to individuals who were convicted of felony convictions, who did their time, you know, served their time, have been out. You know, why aren't they given universal ability to vote? As we've talked about in the past, you know, some states, even in the state of Maine, you're allowed to vote while you're incarcerated because the legislature's attitude in Maine is, did you stop being a human being when you went behind bars? You're still a resident of Maine. So anyway, I think down ballot, there will be, to your point, a lot of things which are going to be driving voters to the polls.
Okay, what are your thoughts about the governor's race, everybody? Who will you vote for? What are your questions? It's 549-2937. Erica is in Ponte Vedra Beach. Hey, Erica, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am calling to express my support for Mayor Andrew Gillum. He has been the most progressive Democrat in the race from the beginning of the race, and I've seen him galvanizing definitely the youth vote on the ground. He is the first one who was in support of Medicare for All and the fight for 15 for the minimum wage. He is also from very humble beginnings. He's the first in his family to go to college, and he has been in public service his entire life. He is the only one who is not a billionaire or a millionaire on the Democratic side running for a nomination, and he definitely has my vote. He has also been endorsed by the Democratic Progressive Caucus of the state of Florida. So this is not the year we're going to be running a Republican-like candidate. He is definitely the candidate who can take us home.
All right, Erica, thanks for that. There is a lot of energy around Gillum's candidacy. He is seen by his supporters as the true progressive in the race. And he recently got some funding from names that are loathed by Republicans. We should point out George Soros, Tom Steyer. He's getting that sort of support from out of state. He has struggled, though, to break to the top of the polling on the Democratic side. So let's talk for a minute about Andrew Gillum.
Sure. I think, first of all, I think that, Erica, I think that you could record a 60-second spot for Andrew Gillum, and he would appreciate it. You did a wonderful job, I think, in identifying what his supporters like about him and in terms of his strengths, both policy-wise and interpersonally. He's a very, very impressive candidate. I think that one of the challenges that Andrew is going to have, that Mr. Gillum will have, Mayor Gillum, that I hear, that, again, this is not my personal opinion, I just hear circulating through other campaigns, is that with four or five strong candidates running, do you want to take the chance that in between August and November that something will come up relative to the city of Tallahassee relative to the culture which has surrounded him in the mayor's office that, of course, he has not been
dealt with an ethics investigation.
Correct. That has been shown not to touch him in any way. However, if there's one thing that Democrats should remember is that the Republican Party in recent elections has a wonderful way of making something out of nothing when it comes to scandal, when it comes to anything which can potentially cloud a race. Think back 8 years ago to the race between Governor Scott and Alex Sink, how Governor Scott, I forget what it was specifically, but made a massive issue out of something that Alex Sink was involved in. Now it escaped me what it was, Melissa. But anyway, there's a definite skill there in being able to take issues and bring them to the front by the Republicans, which I think, again, some voters have expressed is a cautionary tale with Andrew Gillum, considering the fact that we have other good progressives. But listen, last night on the debate forum, too, I thought Andrew Gillum did extremely well, extremely well.
Thomas is in Arlington. Hi, Thomas. How are you?
Fine. How are you doing today?
Okay.
Good. My question is, I'm a convicted felon. I've been able to vote ever since 1980, in the 70s even.
Okay.
And just a couple of weeks ago, I got a letter saying that my voting right has been revoked. Just out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, what can I do about that? You know, that seems sort of strange that all of a sudden now I can't vote anymore.
Where'd the letter come from?
It came from Tallahassee.
Did it come from the Secretary of State's office?
I believe it did, yes.
Okay, and what was the reason given?
Because I'm a convicted felon.
And so how did you get your voting rights restored all these years? Because there were times in Florida when convicted felons could vote, and then the rights were taken away when Rick Scott became governor. Are you saying all throughout Rick Scott's tenure, you've been voting all along?
Yes. I've never had to have my voting rights restored. I've always had them.
Okay. So,
and you have a valid voter registration card in Duval County, correct?
Yes.
And so this is the first time you've had this happen to you in however many years of voting. Interesting. All right, Thomas, I'm going to put you on hold so that we can get your full name and phone number, and we can talk to you later today about this. We're going to get that information from you. Thank you for the call, Thomas. Okay? You're going on hold now so that they can talk to you. Wow. What do you think about that?
I think it's interesting. I think that it'd be interesting if we, in this one show, have a caller by the name of Thomas who was able to get through to your producer and get on air. I wonder how many other Thomases are out there right now in Florida who have received similar letters.
A cynic would say that critics of, GOP efforts to eliminate voter fraud, which is a big concern for Republican voters. They would see Thomas's experience as a cynical attempt to suppress the vote, which Republicans might see as leaning more Democratic.
Yes.
There's no way to know, of course. But we'll talk to him more later. Now let's talk about the Republicans for a minute, because I want to read you this Facebook comment from Sierra. Democrats will have to find anyone other than Jeff Green, and they will send their best wishes to Mr. DeSantis. In other words, Democrats are hoping Ron DeSantis is the nominee for governor. They don't think he can win a general election. Is that a mistake for Democrats to think that?
No, I don't think so. I think if I were one of the Democratic candidates running, I would much rather run against Mr. DeSantis in a general election than Mr. Putnam. Congressman DeSantis has clearly tied his entire campaign to President Trump. And, you know, between now and November, a lot of things can happen, especially relative to the ongoing investigation. I think that, you know, just last week when we saw the 12 indictments handed down by the Mueller investigation with specifics, digital forensics, which were used to determine who the names of these Russian agents were. We hear from you know, a lot of different sources that indictments with the names of Americans being listed will be coming down sometime before the fall or in the early fall. It's very, very probable, at least in my mind, that things could get dicey for the DeSantis campaign being tied so closely at the hip to the Scott campaign. So I appreciate what
you mean, the Trump campaign,
the Trump campaign. So I appreciate Sarah's comments in that regard. And I think that's right. I think that goes back to the very, very beginning of our show today. I think that if you are somebody who is a progressive, if you're somebody who's out there, even if you're a Gillum supporter or a Chris King supporter, I think there's a lot of common, you know, there's going to be a lot of disappointment the day after the primary. But I think that right now there's so much anti-Trump energy and there's so much energy within the Democratic Party to say, listen, we got our first opportunity in 22 years to finally get a governor, a Democratic governor, back in the governor's mansion in Tallahassee. I think you will see them quickly rally behind whomever the candidate is and say, okay.
We're getting so many tweets about the various candidates. Here's one. Gwen Graham will be in St. Augustine tonight. I look forward to hearing her. Here's another tweet from Jim. Candidate King's focus on big sugar is good, but isn't he ignoring other issues like fertilizer, phosphate mining, stormwater, septic tanks? Big sugar is only part of the problem. The role of big sugar in picking politicians in this state, that's coming up again and again, particularly with the situation down in Lake Okeechobee that the candidates talked about last night. That's of less interest to voters up here, but it's still a big issue. You know, Adam Putnam, the agriculture commissioner, is, and Ron DeSantis, one would presume, are both going to take a lot of money from big sugar, and some of the Democratic candidates have too.
Right. I think, you know, to the messenger from, I think it was Facebook, the one thing that Chris King does, he's very, very clearly laid out that his message is the environment, going against big sugar and gun control. And finding different ways that we can respect the Second Amendment in Florida while trying to address gun violence issues. I think that it would benefit Mr. King to look around the rest of the state and potentially say, okay, listen, Northeast Florida is a completely different monster. They know what the Everglades are there, but they have their own algal soup taking place on the St. Johns River, which is, you know, our you know, literally our Everglades here in North Florida. Mm-hmm. So I think that there are ways that you could take that, basically that environmental message, or, you know, who are the biggest pollutants? Who are the biggest people who are negatively impacting the health and economic vitality of our area through, you know, essentially things which are happening negatively on our river, and developing more of a template, if you will, that you could basically take that message and go around the state, because pretty much every community in the state of Florida has some sort of waterway which is threatened. Whether it's our springs in the center of the state, whether regardless of where you are, Florida is one of those states that we just have a precarious water situation in Florida based upon our size, our growth, and the nature of our state.
Okay. With all of that said and all of these issues that will be at play, it will, as you said, come down to turnout. Here's an email from Catherine. I want to encourage everyone to vote. The primary is so important as a foundation for the general election. Low turnout definitely skews the results. Which side do you think will do a better job of turning out their base voters in August?
The Democratic Party. I think by the fact that there's more choices, ground operations right now are robust around the state. You know, the amount of energy I think that I really see on the ground coming out of three campaigns, and I'm going to say in this order, Gillum, King, and Graham. I think that they are really, really running grassroots campaigns, unlike the two gazillionaires, Mayor Levine and Jeff Green, you know, but who are very, very wealthy and who are taking the other approach in terms of doing large odds buys. There's a lot of mobilization around the state on the Democratic side that you just aren't seeing on the Republican side. Now, come the fall, that can change completely. But I think this is going to be a larger than typical turnout for the Democratic Party.
It's coming up soon. Make sure your voter registration is ready to go, no matter which party you're in or who you plan to vote for. Daniel Cronrath, professor of political science at FSCJ. Always good to see you. Thanks for being here.
You as well, Melissa. Thanks.
And much more still ahead later. The new show at Players by the Sea debuts this weekend. We've got a ticket giveaway to go see Lin-Manuel Miranda's In the Heights. Keep listening for that. You might win a pair of tickets. But up next, how you can download a new app and earn rewards for spending time right here in our local parks. Back in a moment.
Metro Rooter specializes in residential plumbing, including tub, faucet, and toilet repairs and replacement. Emergency plumbing 7 days a week, with Saturdays considered the same as weekdays. Proud of their many longtime employees, Metro Rooter also recycles for a healthier planet. MetroRooter.com.
Hi, I'm Mayor Lenny Curry. It's hurricane season. Prepare now by learning your evacuation zone, updating your disaster kit to include water, non-perishable food items, a flashlight with extra batteries, a radio, and other important items. Pick up a 2018 Hurricane Preparedness Guide at your public library and visit jacksready.com for more information. Tune your radio to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, let's say you're at the theater and you don't like what you're seeing up on stage, so you let it rip.
He had keys missing on this little keyboard thing, and he was singing Stevie Wonder. That's just something you don't do. I said, boo, man.
Is booing an act of verbal vandalism or the last true expression of democracy? That's next time on Freakonomics Radio.
Sunday afternoon at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, this is Keith Marks. Join me every Thursday evening at 11 p.m. for Avant Radio, a show of curious music for curious minds. Each show is themed, curated, and contextualized to explore new music. Come get curious on Thursdays at 11 on 89.9 FM.
Welcome back. Well, it's a new wellness initiative that will reward you for spending more time outdoors. Jacksonville's Timaquan Trail State and National Parks are the first parks in the country to use this new technology to get us all a little more active. This is called Go 365. It's a Bluetooth location-based app. If you check in with this app at the parks, you can then earn rewards to buy everything you want, from apparel to gift cards and more. Mark Middlebrook, Executive Director of Timaquan Parks Foundation, is here, along with Laura Nolan from Humana and their Bold Goal partner in all of this. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
All right, Mark, let's start with you. This is a really smart way to get people out into the Timaquan Trail State and National Parks, which are so beautiful. How is this partnership going to work?
Well, I think it's an effort to connect what will be the largest urban park system in the nation with clearly the world-class health care system that we have in Jacksonville. It would seem to be a natural fit. And there are many things that you can do within these preserves that would be a benefit, would have a health benefit.
Yeah, just being outside in nature has been shown time and again to have amazing health benefits for
Without
your blood
question.
Pressure. It's so good for us. So, Laura Nolan, you are with Humana, and this is Humana's Wellness and Rewards Program. How does this work? Go 365.
Well, Go 365 is an employer-sponsored wellness program. So it's a unique program that rewards points that turn into incentives for our members. So the idea behind it is to improve somebody's overall well-being, whether it be fitness by walking outside in the parks, or nutrition, or working with a health coach.
So basically, it's an app that you get through your employer.
Yes, absolutely. And many employers in the city, including the city, Jacksonville Transportation Authority, the PGA, they've all invested in this employer-sponsored wellness program.
So if you work for one of these companies, you download the app, and then what happens?
You download the app, and then you go out into the parks. And at the park locations, we have a beacon set up. So you just click on the Bluetooth on the app, and immediately you'll be rewarded points, which turn into bucks, for being outdoors in our parks.
You're earning money, essentially.
Essentially, yeah. You are. And before this initiative, we had 30,000 different fitness facilities, but they were all traditional. So they were gyms, yoga studios. Now we're opening it to the outdoors, something that people kind of forget about. And it will absolutely improve your well-being.
Wow, this is such a great idea. So you earn bucks through the app, and then you can buy fitness apparel, gift cards. There's a lot of things people can buy through this as they earn the points, right?
Yeah, it's smart incentives. So everybody is motivated by something different. You or I or Mark, we all have different goals. And so really within the mall in Go 365, there's a variety of different rewards, as well as it gives the member the opportunity to donate those bucks back to charity.
Oh, that's nice too. So Mark, this is cool because you kind of think of the park system as it's been around a long time. It's a traditional way to get active. And so you're marrying new technology with something that has deep roots in this community.
Well, it does. And I think that in order for parks to succeed and remain viable in the future, we have to be looking at how people's habits change and what they do and what their activities are. And if we don't adapt to some of those, then the parks could get left behind. And because they're large open spaces, there'll be challenges that other people will want to use them for other things, not parks.
Let's talk a little bit more about Tim Aucoin. Tell us more about, for people listening that have never been, what they will experience when they come.
Well, it's an incredible experience because we have a full range of parks that stretch all the way around the city. The core of the Tim Aucoin obviously is up in the northeast area, which is the Tim Aucoin Ecological and Historic Preserve, which is a National Park Service facility. But we also have multiple state parks. We have a tremendous amount of city parks, some of which are yet to be opened up, but they're there. The properties are there. And so it's a tremendous opportunity. Most people, even people who've lived here for many, many years, when I take them on tours and I stand them out and they look at this, I say, I can't believe this is Duval County. I can't believe it's the city. Can't
right.
Believe
a lot of these parcels are right in the middle of the city.
They really are.
Now, which ones are you said are not opening yet?
Well, we have some properties, a corridor of properties on the west side that we're working on now. They need some restoration, but they're part of a trail system that will run from Jennings State Forest in Clay County to Cary in Nassau. It'll be about a 15-mile corridor.
One of the coolest things about the preserve you mentioned is the Roosevelt area, and that's such a cool story. For people that don't know that story, can you tell the story of the late Willie Brown and how that piece of land came into the possession of the park system?
Well, he had owned that property for many, many years, and I'm not
it's just some guy
expert,
that lived,
but he just lived out there, and he took care of it and for many, many years, and towards the end of his life, he wanted to make sure it stayed preserved, that it didn't become something else. And so he donated it to the National Park Service and wanted it to be named after Theodore Roosevelt, who, of course, was a great conservation advocate.
And it's such a champion of the park system. And so when you go out there now, it's amazing, Laura, I've been out there. You can walk through this area, the Roosevelt area, that's really been the same for thousands of years. And it's right in the middle of Jacksonville.
Wow.
And it's really a completely wild forest. And it's just a beautiful, peaceful place. And it's one of many places people can go to take what they now call a forest bath, which is so good for you. You know, there are health benefits to this. And I try to talk about this as much as I can on this program because so many people living here don't realize that we have the largest urban park system in the country and that there are so many beautiful places in the middle of urban areas that people can go and hike and really enjoy that experience. It's right there for people.
Absolutely. And that's why our Bold Goal initiative to improve the health of Jacksonville 20% by the year 2020. That's why we've partnered with the Tim Aucoin Parks Foundation. We want to overcome the barriers to health and the social determinants that can really impact our community's health. And social isolation is one of them. So if we just get our entire community out there, our elder population out there exploring the parks, it is absolutely going to improve their mental well-being as well as physical.
So Humana is working ahead on its bold goal. Let's explain a little bit more about the imperative behind the bold goal, why we need to work so much on improving this area's health, because our health benchmarks aren't, frankly, that great here on the First Coast.
Yes, Melissa, and thanks for mentioning that. I know we've talked a number of times about the bold goal, but it is very important to us here. In Jacksonville, we have recognized through studies that on average, our population has 4.2 more unhealthy days than other areas. So it's really important when we take a look at the CDC.
What's an unhealthy day?
So an unhealthy day is just how people are feeling it on that particular day. It's a part of the CDC survey, and they reach out to individuals and they ask a series of survey questions. So taking a look at that, we realize that Jacksonville has an unhealthier population than other areas, not only in the state, but across the country. So Humana has worked with all of our community partners as an initiative to bring everyone together to focus on some of these social determinants of health that we have here in the city. And food insecurity, social isolation, diabetes, those are all critical components that we're focused on here.
Sure. And those are so important. At the same time, a very easy way to get more healthy is to just get out and walk. I'd rather go walking through a park than a lot of other places.
That's exactly right. And quite frankly, I try to practice it as much as possible. And if I don't get out once or twice a week, I get pretty cranky. So it's
which trails do you recommend? You're the expert here.
Well, I have several. I mean, I love Little Talbot Island, which I think is just an extraordinary place. And the Roosevelt Preserve as well. But there are several areas around here, they're just incredible to be out. Betts Tiger Point is in the process of being, some new improvements are being coming through the city through Council Member Boyer, and it's a great place.
Yeah. Now, for people that have never been familiar with Timaquan, they can just go to your website and learn more.
You can go to our website at timaquanparks.org. Mm-hmm. We are revamping it to make it a little more useful and to put together more information about some of these new initiatives that we're working on. And so, but it's a huge system that we have.
Yeah. So go to timaquanparks.org, learn about that. And then Laura, for Ghosts 365, this isn't available to everyone, but is it hoped that you could get more employers to sign on so that more people can access this app?
Absolutely. So employers are realizing the value of improving their population's well-being more and more. We see that as a big wellness trend. So as employers make that investment, if they could take a look at something like Go365, they can really see the resources and how it can help guide to improve overall health of their population.
Right. And it's such a cool way to incentivize people to get out and walk and actually earn money through the app to buy the things that they want. Very cool. So thank you both so much for being with us. Laura Nolan from Humana, Mark Middlebrook, Executive Director of the Timaquan Parks Foundation. Always good to see you both. And thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa.
A quick break and then much excitement. We have a ticket giveaway on the show today. So you got to keep listening if you want a pair of tickets to the Tony Award winner for Best Musical, In the Heights. That was what Lin-Manuel Miranda worked on before Hamilton. And we'll tell you where it's being staged here in our area after a very short break. Keep listening. We'll be right back.
Community Hospice and Palliative Care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours, available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com.
The Able Trust, working to assure opportunities for successful employment for all people with disabilities, a skilled workforce for Florida's businesses. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. On the web at abletrust.org.
Foreign auto parts might be the next item to get slapped with tariffs, so why are U.S. car companies so worried?
There are no major national car companies that are just American or just German or just Japanese.
I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Should we hit the brakes on the trade war? That's next time on Marketplace.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk about the links between the British far right, Brexit, and the Trump campaign, and how those links may lead to Russia. Our guest will be Carol Cadwalader, who's broken key stories about this for the British newspapers The Guardian and The Observer. Her reporting has led to a British government investigation. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
3D printing is not the future. It's changing the world right now. With a few instructions and the right technology, you can print anything from a gallbladder to a gun. How will 3D printers impact our ability to innovate? And how might they challenge our laws on intellectual property, free speech, and criminal justice? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, before Lin-Manuel Miranda made such a smash with the Broadway hit Hamilton, he wrote another play. It's called In the Heights, a Tony Award winner for Best Musical, featuring music and lyrics by Miranda. Now, the show centers on an ensemble of characters in New York's Washington Heights neighborhood, and it opens tomorrow night at Players by the Sea. Here with a preview, Bradley Akers, marketing manager with Players by the Sea. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Chris Brown of 927 Events. Good to see you, Chris.
Good morning. Good morning.
Now, in a moment, we were going to have a really cool announcement about a ticket giveaway for this show that Chris and I will talk about. But first, Bradley, everybody knows about Hamilton, but this is what Lin-Manuel Miranda did before Hamilton. So tell us about In the Heights.
Correct. Well, Lin-Manuel Miranda started writing this as a sophomore in college.
Wow.
And grew it over the next 10 years to become a smash hit phenomenon on Broadway. And it was so groundbreaking because it integrates hip-hop music with Broadway-style music, which people had not seen before. And people loved the celebration of the community of Washington Heights. And
that's the very northern tip of Manhattan Island, right?
Right.
Yeah.
With the George Washington Bridge overlooking it. So it's about this community and they're struggling and they're this lottery ticket hanging that could change their lives. And people love the celebration of community that this show represents.
Yeah, it's a great show. And you saw the seeds of Hamilton and how he was playing around with the different musical styles in this show.
Oh, absolutely. You can listen to it and go, oh, I recognize, he has a style.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of tickets, 927 Events is going to be the opening reception sponsor for the 53rd season of shows at Players by the Sea. So you guys are going to be doing a lot, Chris, to make everything very special.
Yes, we're going to be partnering with Players by the Sea. And we're going to do food for the opening nights for all of their events. And then we're also going to cater events at their facility when people host events at their facility. Mm-hmm. So we're really excited about this partnership. It just gives us another opportunity to support the local arts community as we have in the past with the Cultural Council and the Florida Theater and others. So we're just extending our hand a little bit, and we're completely excited about that.
That's a great partnership, the two of you. And not only are you doing that, courtesy of 927 Events, which is also a sponsor on this program, you guys are sponsoring a ticket giveaway to In the Heights. This is really exciting. We have two pairs of tickets to give away right now to listeners. So email us now if you want a pair of tickets to go see the Tony Award-winning In the Heights at Players by the Sea. Email us now at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. The unimpeachable Kevin Mershart will pick two winners at random, and we will relay your names to the show, and your name will be, and your tickets will be available at will call, Bradley. Is that right?
That's correct.
And when, and now these tickets will be available when?
So we have, we run Thursday through Saturdays. So we're offering these tickets for any Thursday in the run. That's three Thursday performances.
Okay, so if they win a pair today, they can use it any Thursday while the show's up for the next month.
That's correct.
Oh, Thursday night only, though, right?
Thursday night only.
So get those emails out now to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Win a pair of tickets to the Broadway Smash In the Heights, the Tony Award winner for Best Musical. And Chris, not only can they get the free tickets, they're going to get the benefit of your amazing food.
They are.
So how about that?
Opening night of each play will feature us.
You'll be there every...
every opening night throughout the season.
Wow. So how many... you've got a lot of shows coming up, I'm sure.
We do. We have eight.
You're going to put them to work.
We are.
Really exciting. Well, the emails are already coming in, and thank you both so much for being with us. We're always excited to do ticket giveaways on the show. There's always lots of enthusiasm, so thanks for making that possible.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bradley Akers with Players by the Sea, Chris Brown of 927 Events. It's In the Heights, opening this weekend out at the beach. And that's our show for today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chepchik. 1A is up next. Three dimensions, endless possibilities. 3D printing. It isn't the future. It's actually changing the world we live in right now. That conversation is coming up on 1A in just a few minutes. Now, make sure to catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock if you missed any portion of today's show. If you're listening to that rebroadcast, the Electro Lounge is right after that. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable as we talk about the biggest stories of the week. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.